The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Let's get right to our first guest of the day, Komal Sreekumar, president of Sreekumar Global Strategies, to take an in-depth look at the stock market, what is driving it, where we're heading next. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good to be on your program.
It's wonderful to have you. And I read with great interest a couple of your recent notes. Let's just start with the action this week, today. The market still seems to have a propensity to want to go up. We know it's a holiday week. We know things are undoubtedly a bit thinner. What is your sense of the stock market right now, the sentiment, the positioning?
I think the sentiment continues to be the same that we have seen in previous months, that it is being propelled upward largely by the presence of the stimulus coming from the Federal Reserve, recently augmented by what we see coming from the Bank of Japan. While we have had some good news items, and a few minutes ago, the factory orders which came out were quite healthy, quite decent. But if you look longer term, Kathleen, what is helping is the fact that the investors in equities think that the Fed is behind them. In other words, there is some kind of a Bernanke put. They can put it to him, and he will be there to support them. And you saw that based on his May 22nd speech and more recently in June, when he hinted at the possibility of tapering, that itself was enough to really cause a major correction in the market. And last week, you had so many of the Fed governors falling on top of each other, both doves and hawks, coming out and explaining, telling the market not to worry. To me, that's a very unhealthy phenomenon. Stocks should eventually be going up based upon fundamentals, not because you are going to have eternal zero interest rates and therefore that the Fed is pushing you to take more and more risk. It's almost as if the Fed forgot what happened in 2007, 2008, and they are playing the same game yet again.
Ah, but the message seems to be now that they are cognizant that perhaps their reflating assets has gone a little too far. Jeremy Stein, one of the relatively new Fed governors, is with expertise in financial markets. Some say he's had an influence on Ben Bernanke and others, and that's precisely why they have started to send these signals, that they can see what the markets have done, and they don't want it to go too far.
Well, I think the market is, again, continuing to go up. I think the market has taken heart from the recent statements. The last week, Jeremy Stein included, Kathleen, didn't do anything, I think, to hold back on market speculation. The expectation is, well, let's see if the Fed really tightens, and then we'll worry about it at that time. So I think if the Fed starts to tighten in September, tightening meaning reduced amount of bond purchases, and if that happens, I think the market will once again take a hit because the market truly doesn't expect a tapering despite all the statements that we have had last week. And this has gone on too long. We have had 4 years of quantitative easing. We have made what was supposed to be emergency measures of late 2008 into everyday measures. And when that happens and when you're so addicted to drugs, you're not going to believe that you're going to be weaned away from drugs anytime soon, and that's exactly where the equity market finds itself today.
Still strung out on quantitative easing.
Still very much on quantitative easing. I'd like to see actual reduction in the bond purchases, let's say going from $85 billion a month to, let's say, $60 or $65 billion a month. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Once the market corrects, I think the Fed will take fright and once again change its message.
Let me ask you this. If the Federal Reserve surprises you, and if in September they discuss tapering off and make some statement that they are getting ready to actually do it and follow through, because remember, the Fed has emphasized, Bernanke has emphasized, that they can buy fewer bonds and still be highly stimulative, right? So if they announce something like that, would that change your mind at all? Would you reassess then where this market's going?
That's a very good question, Kathleen. I'm ready to be surprised in September. I'm ready to find out that they do indeed go down to a slightly smaller amount of purchases on a monthly basis. If that actually takes place, I think there will be a market correction. And the question is how much of a correction actually takes place. If it goes down to 65 and they've actually reduced the purchases, the market is going to think it's going to go from 65 to 50 to 25 and perhaps as Chairman Bernanke indicated in his May speech, that we may go down to zero purchases by the middle of 2014. Once the market realizes that and then builds into it, that means that shortly after that, rates may start to increase sometime after June of 2014. There will be, in my opinion, a market correction if the Fed surprises me by actually going through with what Mr. Stein announced last week. So essentially, it is one or the other. You either keep the speculation going, the stock market keeps rising for a while, or you surprise investors by actually cutting back on it. I think that the chances of a surprise are low because from what I have seen, this is a very, very dovish Fed. Last reason why I think this is likely to continue, by September, you hopefully President Obama would have named the successor, the next chairman or next chairwoman who will take the Federal Reserve. And I can't believe that Mr. Bernanke is going to leave in the last 3 months or 4 months of his tenure with all the uncertainty gripping the market just as his successor assumes office.
Well, actually, but many people have said, in fact, that it's Bernanke's aim to lay this path out, to get it started for the next chairman before he leaves. No one knows. Everyone is speculating.
Right.
Everyone is coming to some conclusion. We don't know, but there's equally people convinced on the other side that it is intent, if he can, to go ahead and get that laid out. Just want to put in we've got a breaking news on the Bloomberg Terminal. Nissan U.S. June vehicle sales up 12.9%, almost spot on with the estimated 13%. However, Chrysler, Ford, GM all beating estimates. So I want to get to your position on stocks. And it's got many aspects, and I want to get into the global arguments you make about Europe and China and more. But we can flesh those out. First, you say basically stay defensive right now, correct?
That's correct. Stay defensive in terms of utilities, high dividend stocks. REITs, again, offer a bargain after the recent reduction when the Fed suggested a cutback in purchases. All of those make the defensive stocks more interesting today than they did before.
And so this is something that probably serves people well, almost regardless of what the Fed does. Is it a good place to be as you kind of sit back and wait and see what happens?
That is right. Since the Fed may or may not surprise us, I think in either case, if you want to be a risk-averse investor, that is where you want to be to protect your nest egg. Because I'm talking about the common mutual fund investors and where they are going, where they should be, rather than talk about a highly sophisticated investor who has the ability to get in and get out at short notice. If you're going to be there for even a few months' time and you're not able to time the market perfectly, as I'll admit I'm not able to time the market perfectly, then you want to be in a situation of being more defensive given the continuing existence of uncertainties in the markets as well as with the macroeconomy.
You know, you have mentioned the likelihood that we could see another correction in stocks, right? Because we had one after the last Fed meeting when Ben Bernanke talked more specifically about tapering off on the bond purchases. What kind of correction do you think we could see? What kind of level could you see us going down to on the S&P 500?
I can see a correction of as much as 15%, especially Whoa. Because we have run up. And the later we delay, and if you have the Fed feeding the speculation going into 2014, then the correction that you expect would be even greater. So in other words, you can't avoid the correction. You can change the timing of the correction. You can boost speculation and keep postponing the time of the correction, but I don't think it's avoidable.
So you think well into the 1400s, even lower?
It could go into the 1400s once the correction comes, yes.
I'm just trying to do the math really quickly in my head. If we're 15% down from 1622, that would be a decent move.
Yeah, we are going to in the neighborhood of the 1400 area. Now we are 1623 this morning.
Fed surprises him and does announce a move to start tapering off its bond purchases in September. We could see up to a 15% correction in stocks. But let's talk about your global view, because that's also the basis for telling people to stay defensive. And it's I really have to start with Egypt and what's going on there. You also pointed this out as something that investors are watching. What are the dynamics that are important right now when it comes to investors in the markets?
I think there are two or three major things about going for Egypt, Kathleen. First is over the years, it has been a strategic supporter of the United States under President Mubarak and even before that with President Sadat. Now it's the last year of Mr. Morsi's government, the one which is under attack today, that we have had an ambivalent association between Egypt and the United States. Now, the U.S. finds itself in a very delicate spot because this is an elected president, but he's not popular with the public anymore. So the U.S. is seen as supporting him, and anti-U.S. sentiment has increased. So that's one thing for U.S.-based investors to be concerned about. Second, even though Egypt is not known for being an oil producer, it actually requires oil to be given to it by its neighbors. It is at the top of the Suez Canal. It is clearly an area which controls the movement of world trade going from Asia to Europe. And that, in turn, if something were to happen, an outburst in Egypt which damages that, we are going to look for world transportation, global trade to be affected adversely. So those are some of the considerations, I think, regarding Egypt that make it a lot more important, a lot more serious than what is going on in Turkey or Brazil by comparison.
And of course, and they've certainly had their own problems. Europe, let's take a look at Europe now, because you are concerned about the economy, European unemployment, policies that aren't working, and what that means for the euro versus the dollar.
That's exactly right. We just had the eurozone unemployment rate increased earlier this morning from 12.1 to 12.2%. They revised it up. At the same time, the producer price index, Kathleen, for the last 12 months was negative, minus 0.1. So you are looking at a region which is, I think, starting on the throes of deflation, which is never good for economic growth. It is not good for employment. And at the same time, you have a euro which is, in my opinion, is significantly overvalued. The euro needs to depreciate significantly in order for the eurozone to get some benefit out of exports. The most important point, though, is that we have had the debt crisis for something like 4 years now since Greece had its problems in 2009, and it is far from being resolved. It is being treated as a liquidity problem. It is clearly a lack of solvency. Many of these countries suffer from an excess debt. And in real terms, what it means is they cannot get out of a recession unless they are given a reduction in the level of debt. Now, what does that mean? Reducing Greece's debt or Ireland's debt or Cyprus' debt means that the bank lenders on the other side will have to take a haircut, which so far they've been unwilling to do. So these are the uncertainties, I think, that face not only Europe, but the global banking system.
A couple other quick things let's hit on, if we can, quickly. Let's start with Abenomics. You say it runs the risk of a flight of capital from Japan and JGBs, Japanese government bonds.
I say that, Kathleen, because the Mr. Abe started with three arrows. The third arrow was supposed to be structural adjustments other than monetary and fiscal stimulus. And that is simply not happening. So you have a very graying population. You have areas which are restricted for youth to enter. Those are the areas that, so if you just depend on monetary stimulus, my view is that is eventually going to lead to a failure of the program. But with so much money being created, because they are buying more bonds in the last month than the United States, even though Japan is just one-third of the U.S. size. So once the impact is felt on the market, at some point, people decide to leave the yen crashes, the JGB yields surge, and that's not going to do much good to the Japanese economy or to the world economy.
And you also talk about not believing in a China hard landing thesis, just a slowdown. Quickly, what does that mean globally and again for this sense of where we should put our money?
Yeah, quickly, what it means is that you don't get the stimulus from China, but you do get the benefit that it doesn't cause a global economy to go down sharply. So it's a good news, bad news case. What do you do in terms of investments? That means that with the Shanghai Stock Exchange Index below the 2000 mark and in levels comparable to 2008, 2009, China might soon become a buy. It is an exception to my view that emerging market equities and fixed income have a further downside.
Quick final question. If there's such risk in Japan, isn't that one more thing, though, that just inclines a lot of people to buy U.S. stocks if they're going to be in equities? They may not be the best place to be in an absolute sense, but in a relative sense, that's where people are going to want to be.
Absolutely. I agree with you fully. My view is that U.S. is clearly the best house in a bad neighborhood. And despite my concerns about the Fed and the Bernanke policies, I stick to the fact that U.S. equities are better than the rest of the world.
Wow, we have gone around the world. Thanks so much. Terrific conversation.
Thank you, Kathleen.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.